Hi, everybody. I'm Eugene Driscoll of ValleyIndie.org. Welcome to what is not an episode of Navel Gazing, the Valley Indie podcast. No, what you'll be listening to today, if you choose, is an audio recording of a meeting of the Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments. That is, I believe it's 19 member towns of municipal officials from all over the Naugatuck Valley. Mayor Neil O'Leary of Waterbury is the chairman. Vice chairman is Shelton Mayor Mark Loretti. They hosted a COVID-19 forum Thursday, April 23rd, with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. For the first 16 minutes of the recording, Senator Blumenthal gives NVCOG an overview of the trillions of dollars in federal aid passed to try to help people and organizations that have been stymied by COVID-19. And then after the 16-minute mark, it gets turned over to the municipal officials from NVCOG, and they question the senator.
Well, first of all, thank you to you, Mayor O'Leary, and to all of the other mayors and their representatives. Thanks, Rick, for bringing us together, and to my staff, Ellen and others. And really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you because we are literally in the course of putting together another emergency relief package right now as we speak. And also at this very moment, I think the House of Representatives is voting on another interim package that we approved earlier this week. Last Tuesday in the afternoon, that will provide additional funding, another close to $500 billion funding package. And let me just say right at the outset, these numbers are very hard for me to sort of comprehend. Our third package was $2.2 trillion. That's about the size of the federal budget, which takes us months and months to put together. It's about twice the size of the defense budget. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. It takes us 5 months of hearings, meetings, markups, and we put that package together in roughly 5 days. That was the third. The first two were $8 billion, the second $100 billion, and then $2.2 trillion. And I'm going to give you a rough overview of that one. I think you've probably all read about it, so I'm going to be really brief about it and then hopefully take your questions. We provided for $1,200 payments to everybody earning less than $75,000. We provided the Paycheck Protection Program, about $350 billion. That's the program that provides loans to small businesses with 500 employees or fewer. Loans up to $10 million that can be converted into grants. That is, they are forgiven if those workers are kept on payroll. If the employees are retained, the loan is forgiven by the SBA. That program was so popular, in fact, deluged by applications, that it was exhausted in 13 days. And that's one of the reasons why we did this interim package being voted on by the House today. There have been various problems with that program, and I'll discuss them in a minute. But just as to the rest of the relief package, very significantly, unemployment insurance boosted by $600 per person per week. In other words, if you're on unemployment compensation now, what you get is $600 more for 4 months. That brings people up to, or in a lot of cases, above what they would be making if they were actually on the job. That's unemployment insurance. And there have been problems with that program, principally the computer programming and portals and so forth, which Governor Lamont has assured me, you may have heard from too, have been resolved. And then There was a program for aid to hospitals and healthcare clinics, including the investment in research for vaccines and therapeutics, $130 billion. About 100 of that, 100 billion went to hospitals. I know many of you have hospitals. You know how stretched thin they are. In fact, some are at the point of financial disaster because their revenues have plummeted, their expenses have risen drastically, and their contributions have diminished because contributors have been hard hit in the markets. And then very significantly, $150 billion to state and local governments. For Connecticut, $1.5 billion to go to our state because it has been divided by county for other states. In other words, states that have large county governments. Some of those county governments are eligible for funding. In Connecticut, it's our state, and the governor will allocate the money among state agencies and local governments. $1.5 billion, nowhere near enough. So the outlines of this program, I think, are very helpful as a relief to put money in the hands of workers and families who are literally trying to put food on the table, pay their rent, mortgage, utilities, and money in the hands of small businesses, many of them hanging by a thread, you know, from your communities, the restaurants. I had a meeting this morning with about 200 restaurants. I've had meetings ranging from 100 to 250, 300 small businesses all across the state, literally almost every day. So I know what's happening with small businesses, and the Paycheck Protection Program is vitally important to them, giving them a lifeline to survive. But it was exhausted literally within 13 days. And so Senator McConnell proposed $250 billion as an interim measure before the next relief package, in other words, the fourth major relief package. He said, let's do an interim package, $250 billion for small business. We said, that's not enough. We said, also, it's not enough for a small business paycheck protection program. It ought to be $300 or $500 billion. But also, hospitals and healthcare need more money, and so do state and local governments. Well, in the negotiation that followed in the past few days, we were successful on the hospitals. So this package contains about $380 billion for paycheck protection and other small business programs like the emergency, injury development loan program and the grant program, as well as $60 billion allocated to smaller lenders, community lenders. Many in your communities will now be eligible. Hopefully smaller businesses, the 500 employee cap on paycheck protection has really enabled, I'll be very blunt, the lenders to play some favoritism toward the bigger borrowers. In other words, initially, some of the banks said, we're only loaning to customers who have come to us for loans before. We don't care whether they have payroll accounts or checking accounts or personal accounts. And we said no, and we pushed them to expand access. But still, they tended to favor the bigger customers, particularly who had loans previously. So we have tried to push the money toward the smaller businesses. And you know from your community, they have been clamoring, they've applied, they've been put on hold, and we want to make sure it goes to them fairly and equally. Second, on the hospitals, it clearly 130 billion, which was the initial amount, nowhere near enough. So there's another 100 billion for healthcare, 70 billion of it to the healthcare systems like hospital health clinics, and then 30, well, it's about 25 billion to testing. Testing is really key to reopening our economy. People are not going to go back to the malls, go back to school, go back to restaurants or retail shops unless they feel safe. Governors can open the economy. They can say, okay, you know, folks, you can go back to the beaches, to the restaurants, to the casinos, wherever, but people are going to vote with their feet. Unless they feel safe, they're simply not going to go back to those public places. And so testing is key to know who's infected, and then tracing who have they contacted. And of course, testing not only for infection, that is the disease, but also for antibodies. So we know who is immune. And of course, they're perfectly safe to go back to work or wherever they want to go. So this package, $380 billion, for small business loan and grant programs, and then another 100 billion, 70 of it for hospitals, 30 billion or 25 billion to testing, it's about 75-25, is the package now being voted by the House. You may have noted when I said we were pushing hard for local governments, we feel more is absolutely necessary for state and local governments. The state of Connecticut has spent far more than $1.5 billion on COVID-19 related programs. And my guess is that your budgets have been severely strained as well. We were unsuccessful. Senator McConnell just said absolutely not. So we go into this next fourth stage with the priorities of state and local government aid, more for the small business program, because our feeling is that the amount, even in this second package, is probably not going to be enough. And then other programs that we feel are important, like food security. All of you, I'm sure, have seen the photographs. I've been at food pantry programs, mobile pantry programs of Connecticut Food Bank, people waiting literally in their cars. The lines are miles long. The food banks give away 400 meals, 400 baskets of food, rather, and there's still a mile of cars. People are going hungry in the state of Connecticut. And so food security is a major issue, student debt, and other programs like election security that are important for November. So that's sort of, and then others that you may have in mind. And one of the reasons I was very glad to have this call is I encourage you to give me your ideas for what should be our priorities in this next package. We've done all of them eventually on a bipartisan basis. The last two were unanimous. The $2.2 trillion program was achieved in the Senate and approved 96-0. The last one was unanimous. So they've been strongly bipartisan and overwhelmingly approved, even the first two, $8 billion and $100 billion. And my hope is that we'll continue to work on a bipartisan basis. And I welcome your involvement. You folks are on the front line. I've supported a program called the Heroes Fund that would provide for premium pay to the essential workers, police, fire, emergency responders, healthcare, clinicians, docs, nurses, technicians who are in the hospitals and the health clinics, saving lives, putting their lives on the line, and grocery workers, others who are delivering food, folks at the checkout counters, and all of them, premium pay up to $13 an hour on top of what they're making now, funded by the federal government, retroactive to January 27, when the healthcare emergency was declared, and then to the end of the year. Again, not out of your budgets, it would be federal funding from this Heroes Fund. And I think it's very appropriate to recognize these heroes, your police and fire, as well as other essential employees. And I'm hoping that that measure will also be included in the next emergency relief fund. But we have a ways to go. It's going to be a long road back. This pandemic has been just deeply painful. I know all of you have personal experiences, friends, neighbors, loved ones. A good friend of mine whose children played with my children growing up passed away. A young guy who just got the disease, and 5 days later he was dead. And I mean, we all, at this point, we all have those stories, I'm sure. The hardship and heartbreak have been absolutely unprecedented in my lifetime, but I've been deeply impressed with the way our state has come together, people caring for each other, giving to each other. You've seen it in your communities, people working when they know they are taking risks, number of your employees included, and surely a number of you. So I have been inspired by what I have seen, and I'm hopeful that we will continue to work together as we've done in a very bipartisan and really unprecedented way, because what we face, the challenges are unprecedented as well. So I'm happy to take any questions, comments, suggestions, ideas. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Senator. And I'm going to open it up to the floor. I see we're also joined now by the first selectwoman of Woodbury. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mayor.
Good to see you.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Barbara.
And thank you for that overview, Senator. And I'll open it up to open it up to the floor. Who would like to start? Selectman Miller.
No particular questions, but I do appreciate you taking the time to kind of give us an update and be available for something like this. It's certainly appreciated. These are challenging times for all of us. We're a pretty tight-knit group, the 19 of us, but it's nice to have that connection directly to you to be able to ask these questions. So while I don't have a question, I guess it's just a comment of appreciation for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Kurt.
And to shop with me, Senator. I appreciated that.
Thank you. You're looking good. I know you're a tight-knit group, and I just, in case you, Kurt, or anyone else has questions that aren't asked now, let me give you my cell number, 202, and anytime you have a question, or obviously if a constituent asks you a question and you think I can be helpful, don't hesitate to let me know.
Great. Next, anyone?
Hi, my name is... and I have a
question. I'm sorry.
George, First Selectman Temple, please go ahead.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt anybody. How are you doing, Senator? Thank you for talking to us this afternoon.
Thanks, George.
This is the time that we, a lot of us are involved in the budget process, and I can't help but think when I'm thinking in terms of dollars and cents now. Do we have any idea of what the total cost of this is going to be to the country, and what are our plans for paying it?
Well, that issue is very much on our minds, George, I'm asked about it, and we thought about it long and hard. We've continued to think about it. Let me just say, this bipartisan unanimity is not without many of us wondering, how are we going to pay for the trillions of dollars that in effect are being borrowed now? The good news here is that the borrowing is at just about 0% interest rates. As you know, people are practically paying the federal government to hold their money because of the uncertainty and confusion in the equities markets. But it's still debt. And I think our view is it will be paid back. It's our money, taxpayer money, that's been borrowed, and you need to pay it back. But it will be paid back in the future. The way to view it, I think, is as an investment, which you do all the time in your budgets. We're investing here in keeping people at work, keeping people fed, literally, making sure they stay in their homes, and most important, giving them an opportunity to stay in their jobs. This whole program is designed to keep people in their jobs. That's the whole PPP program, Paycheck Protection Program. Businesses have loans forgiven if they keep people employed. On the larger program for companies 500 employees or more, they have to retain their employees to get those loans. And those loans will be paid back by them. There are other provisions. Obviously, if a company does not keep workers on their payroll on the PPP program, it does not convert to a grant. And so that money has to be paid back. But the simple fact is, trillions of dollars are being invested because we're paying now on the understanding we'll have to pay a lot more later if we don't conquer this disease. And so the investment in healthcare is tremendously important to find a vaccine, to do testing, to create a sense of security so that we can reopen the economy and return to normal. The investment is unprecedented. The amounts of money are staggering, but so are the implications of this disease. We have no cure and we have no prevention. We have no vaccine and we have no therapeutics. So this is pretty scary stuff. And it's especially scary to the most vulnerable groups, people of a certain age, people with pre-existing conditions, but it really can take anyone, and it can do it in a really cruel, brutal way within a matter of days. So your question is extremely well taken. How are we going to pay for it? And the answer is we're borrowing, and hopefully we'll get our economy back on its feet, and we won't have any tax cuts upcoming. That's one way we're going to pay for it. We won't have tax cuts. We may have to refinance this debt, depending on how long the bonds are for when they mature. But it's an important step going forward. And the federal government can afford it a lot better than states and local governments because their borrowing is at much higher cost.
Thank you.
That was not a timer.
Okay.
Who would like to?
Rick, I have a quick question if I could.
Sure, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, Senator, for taking the time. I just wanted to also sort of echo, your thoughts on the Heroes Fund or additional funding for some of our frontline municipal workers. And I think included in that, and I think broadly speaking, mental health services are going to be a big component and a big need going forward. We're seeing in Cheshire an enormous number of folks reaching out for help, and we're providing through our social services department, our human services folks are doing a great job trying to convert to telemedicine type therapy. But I think we can all expect, as many of us are struggling through, the mental health effects of this. I just hope that that you'll keep that in mind, and that Congress will look to see if there's ways they can support that.
That's a very good point, Sean. Everybody's been pretty good about staying at home, physical distancing, which a lot of people call social distancing. I don't like calling it social distancing. I don't want social distancing. I want physical distancing. But the real threat here, there is a threat of isolation, social isolation. You know, I'm feeling it. I'm sure many of you are. I can go an entire day being in the house, which I don't recall ever doing before. You know, normally, I was thinking when George was talking, I'm visiting you guys in your offices, in your towns. I love getting around hearing from you directly in your offices, what's going on, or, you know, in your workplaces. I think particularly of many of our elderly who are at home. They can't see their kids or their grandkids. A lot of the folks in nursing homes, they are really isolated in assisted living facilities, as you know, with good reason, because it's dangerous for them to be in contact sometimes with each other, as we've seen from the consequences. But you're absolutely right. The mental health effects of this social isolation for everyone, the anguish, the anxiety, the break with normalcy, takes a real toll. And the longer it goes on, the worse that toll will take. So I think as part of that healthcare issue, we need to address the emotional and mental health impacts. That's a good point.
Thank you, Senator. Next. Mayor Zopo Sassu.
We're really just still trying to get through the voluminous amounts of information that is being sent to us from both the federal and state governments. And we're continuing to just have discussions about how to fund our July 1st budget, what could possibly be coming in terms of anticipated relief, and trying to maintain a reasonable mill rate increase so that we can continue our services. So it's really been pretty much a seesaw of discussions based on how we're going to accomplish that. And there's really no time frame as to when to anticipate any type of aid. So that is impacting our decision-making process, which I'm sure many other communities are going through as well. But we recognize our residents and our businesses are going through economic difficulties, but we also have services to provide. And our first case is obviously keeping our frontline workers, including our utility, public works, police, and farm, and healthy. And to date, we are. But that comes at a cost of separating workforces, staggering crews, alternating shifts, all of which is expensive but necessary. So at this point, at the local level, I think the biggest issues we have is trying to anticipate what possibly could come through from either the state or the federal government, when it will hit, and how we can apply it.
And I can say to you that the state will be getting money right away, but I don't know how it will be allocated or when, and we're going to be pressing for more money, as I indicated earlier, in the next relief package. But whether and how that will happen, I can't say for sure. We're trying to push McConnell to do it as quickly as possible. But, you know, you mentioned keeping your fire and police, first responders healthy. Are you finding that you have enough access to testing to do that, and other forms of protective equipment? And maybe ask others as well.
We currently are struggling with personal protective equipment, but we've been doing okay. Anything that we get, it first gets allocated to Bristol Hospital to make sure their supplies are up. They are a testing site, so we've had access to early testing in our community for the last probably 5 or 6 weeks, which are reflected in our numbers. So we have about 300 positive test cases, but that's, I think, in excess of the bell curve only because we had access to so many tests. You know, I think it's just a matter at this point of trying to just stay in communication amongst our departments. One department gets access to gloves and they share PPE equipment, shields, mask making, all of that. It's unfortunate that it's at that point that we're really kind of piecing it together, but so far it's been working, and we do have a strong frontline crew here, and it's, you know, the best as we can expect.
Great.
Senator, I had a couple of questions or comments, a little bit of both, from the urban side of the coin. One of the areas that, we talked a little bit about the hospital situation, you know, as you know, we have Waterbury and St. Mary's, and St. Mary's, of course, is part of Trinity, and Waterbury Hospital being part of the Prospect Medical Group. But I had conversations with both CEOs yesterday who are almost just overly anxious and in one case almost distraught about the, you know, the financial hit that's taking place. As you know, they all elective surgeries were canceled quite some time ago, which is a primary source of their revenue. And, you know, obviously with the demographics here in Waterbury and, you know, the hospitals are gravely concerned and had asked, I had mentioned that you were checking in with us today, but just had asked you to please. And I know that some of the packages that you've described already have set aside for the hospitals, but I think it's really something we need to continue to focus on for sure. The other area that I'm very concerned about, Senator Blumenthal, is the education side. Certainly the challenges faced here that we face here in public schools in Waterbury with our 19,000 school students is to, you know, make sure that our students have the ability for the online learning component. While I'm really proud and grateful that we've handed out about 4,000 Chromebooks over the last 2 weeks and gotten many, many of our homes online that didn't have internet access, we still have a long way to go. And, you know, I have concerns. Obviously, it doesn't look good for this school year to resume since, you know, we're so far along now. And then I'm, you know, with the constant talk that's all over the media now about the virus returning back to us in the fall has everyone unnerved, including myself. And I know that there are some colleges already that have already canceled the fall semester. Having said that, I'm concerned that our students may fall behind if we're not very careful about, you know, particularly the distressed municipalities and the urban centers, to make sure that these students have access to these Chromebooks and the online learning. So there's not a question in there. It's just a concern that I have for a city, you know, similar to the same concerns, I'm sure, in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Meriden, New Britain, you know, where you have a large population of English as second language learners. And, of course, you know, the ability to make sure that we're getting into these homes. And I'm really, listen, we have some wonderful communities that surround Waterbury, and they're all part of this cog. And when I talk to my friends, you know, in Cheshire and Woodbury and Region 14, Southbury, Bethlehem, you know, they're really much further ahead in the curve, the learning curve and the technology curve than we are. And had we been able to anticipate this, maybe that'll be part of the postmortem of all this later. I wish we could have had the ability to see a little bit more of this coming. But I'm concerned there, Senator, about that disparity between the urban communities and the suburban communities on the education front. And I really think that, you know, we've emptied out every Chromebook in our school system. Still doesn't allow us enough to put computers in everyone's home. You may have heard that the foundation, the Dalio Foundation, is going to supply 60,000 Chromebooks in the next probably 3 to 4 to 5 weeks, which of course will be an enormous help. But, you know, as we all know, by the time that happens, we'll probably be looking into some summer school programs and then try to figure out what the September school year is going to look like. And I just, you know, I have grave concerns for every member of our COG, Senator. And I know that you mentioned the $1.5 billion that is coming into the state of Connecticut. But I have grave concerns for, you know, municipalities that are heavily reliant on state aid, such as Waterbury. And then, of course, the lack of revenue that the state of Connecticut is going to see in the form of a decrease in sales tax, casino revenue, income tax. I know this is all uncharted waters, and I know that this is all new to each and every one of us. But, you know, as I think it was, I don't remember which one of us elected, we're talking about budget preparation. You know, we're putting together our budget now, and we're grateful that our tax collection for this fiscal year is very high again. But I think it would be almost foolish for each of us to think that we're going to see similar numbers in the next fiscal year budget preparation. And, you know, I know that myself and other elected are trying to figure out, could it be a 5% reduction in property tax revenue for the next fiscal year? Could it be even 10% of a reduction in the fiscal tax revenue for the next fiscal year? And although none of us want to think that way, you know, we're all trying to brace ourselves for that and prepare for the worst in case it does happen. So, you know, that's just a perspective. And, you know, from my own, you know, conversations with our area selectmen and mayors, you know, I thought I'd share some of those thoughts with you at least.
Right. You know, I think those points are really, really important. And dealing with the last one, as I told Ellen a little bit earlier, I wish I had a firmer, more precise grasp on what the timing is going to be going forward. I'm just going to be blunt on this phone call. I'm in the minority. Senator McConnell, the majority leader, has total control about the schedule of the United States Senate. We're trying to push as quickly and effectively as possible for a next phase that will contain more money for exactly the kind of needs that you've mentioned, especially education, which is at the heart of what you do and the core function of any governmental enterprise. So I really am very sensitive to that point. And on the connectivity, broadband connectivity, I'm so glad you mentioned it. I personally have led the effort in the Senate on this issue. 26 of my colleagues joined me in a letter to the leadership on both sides of the aisle saying we need to include this in our budget. Online learning can't happen by accident. Internet connectivity is just critical. And, you know, some of my colleagues came to me and they said, Connecticut, you guys are, you're a wealthy state. And, you know, you're urban, you're suburban. We can understand rural areas. They need broadband connection. I said, parts of our urban areas don't have that connectivity, whether it's because of the absence of computers or the simple connections that are absent. And I've been talking to Comcast and other internet providers about this issue, distributors. So this point is tremendously important. I know Representative Hayes is well aware of it from her background as a professional educator, but I can promise you I will champion this point. We couldn't get it into the packages up to now, but it will be a priority, and I should have mentioned it because Senator Schumer is also aware of it, and we're going to make a priority on our side, and I hope it will be on both sides. And I just want to emphasize once again, these packages have been bipartisan. There are so many more points of agreement than difference between us. This disease is bipartisan in its impact. It doesn't ask whether you're Republican or Democrat. The hospitals don't ask whether you're Republican or Democrat when you are sick. And we have to approach it in the same way. We have to do it together, put aside our political differences, our geographic differences, and really come together on these points, such as you've just mentioned, internet connectivity, local finance. You know, it's a common challenge throughout this country. So very, very important points that you've just raised.
Well, thank you. And we're very, once again, we're very appreciative of you being here with us today. I think that the one thing that's going to be most important as we continue this journey until we figure out what the next 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks are going to look like is to, you know, keep these lines of communication open. I think it'll bring great relief to some of the anxiety that some of the local cities and towns are feeling, recognizing that, you know, there's not going to be any easy solutions to any of these challenges, but if there's at least good lines of communication, as we've always had with you and your staff, it makes things a little bit more, if we can appreciate your challenges and try to understand and recognize and get together on what we can focus on moving forward. Anyone else would like to join in? We're done.
Sure. Senator, thank you very much for doing this today. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Rick.
Just 2 points I'd like to raise. We talked a lot about Treasury's decision to not to get dollars down to the local level below cities consisting of 500,000 people or counties consisting of 1 million people. I don't know if that'll change or if there's any opportunity to, for that to change in the next bill. I think getting the aid down to the level where it's really needed, especially for towns that are going to be facing a challenge on tax collection, is going to be critical. But the thing I really wanted to bring to your attention is on the unemployment side, we know that Congress passed the bill in such a way that sole proprietors, small businesses, would qualify for that money. And our communities, you know, sure, we love the big employers with 200, 500, 1,000 jobs, but most of our businesses are small family-run businesses. And many of those family-run businesses typically don't participate in the unemployment system the way it normally functions. We've heard from many of these small family businesses that are temporarily closed that they're unable or they've been rejected for unemployment insurance payments during this. Do you know anything about, I mean, Congress's intent was to make sure that those people were included in that bill. Is that correct?
That is correct. And sole proprietors, contractors, single employee businesses, the whole idea was to include them, the gig economy, sole proprietorships. And so if we can help them, if there is some kind of obstacle, unfortunately, as you know, it's the state that administers the program. And the computer system of the state is decades old. They think they have ironed out the problems. One of them has been to, in effect, match the sole proprietor program or the identification, whatever it is. I'm now revealing my IT ignorance, but in some way to make sure that they are taken into the system in the right way. I think we're going to have to go back and make sure the state system is administering it in the right way and people are not improperly rejected or figure out what the problem is. But if you have specific instances, we'd like to hear from you about who they are so we can better know what the problem is, maybe help those people have access to the system. And if not, somehow legislate in the next package to make it possible for them to have access, because that was very much the intent of the program, as you've said. And on the idea of making sure that more money goes to localities, yes, as we proposed, although it didn't get into this latest 3.5 package, we have proposed that smaller population entities be recipients of aid in the state and local aid package. That's a really important point, because obviously for Connecticut and frankly for a lot of states around the country, small towns aren't getting anything, basically. So that's a problem.
Yeah, well, as you know, in this COG, we have many small towns. So that's, yeah. I appreciate you bringing that up, Senator. Anything else, Rick?
No, I think Senator and CEOs covered most of the issues I would have asked about. So,
well, this is a great group and a great, I mean, some of the members of the COG couldn't join us, but I hope you'll get the word out to them. They can call me if they have any questions. Rick, you have my cell phone, 202. I really, as I say, I regret not being able to visit you, as I am accustomed to doing. This kind of contact we'll have to do for now, but it's better than nothing. And I really look forward to a time when I can be out and around and seeing you again. And don't hesitate to let me know. I really, really appreciate all your hard work. I know how difficult, painful, challenging it's been for every one of you and for the folks who work with you. But we are, you know, not only this COG, but Connecticut is a state of small towns. You know, 169 of us, some are bigger than others, like Waterbury. Even, you know, we're a community. We really come together in a time of adversity. And my thanks to every one of you for your leadership. Thank you.